Have you ever watched a pelican skim the surface of the water? Wings locked, not a single flap, gliding inches above the waves for what seems like forever on almost no effort at all. That bird is cheating. It's using a slab of physics that engineers have chased for 80 years and mostly failed to tame. Today we're going to talk about a company that thinks it finally has. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Vector, and this is Cleared Direct, the show where we take the aviation technology that sounds like science fiction and figure out whether the numbers actually close. Today's subject is a machine that refuses to be an airplane or a boat and insists on being both. Let's break this down. Before we get into the physics, a quick word from the people helping keep this segment in the air. This one supported by AviationSoul.com. They make aviation challenge coins that mark the real milestones. First solo. Private pilot, instrument rated, CFI. The whole journey, cast in metal, you can hold, beautifully made and built to last. If you've got a milestone worth marking, or you know someone who does, that's aviationsoul.com. Okay, let's talk about the Pelican. The company is called Regent Craft. They're based in Rhode Island, and the machine they're building is called the Viceroy. They don't call it an airplane, they call it a sea glider. And the technology underneath it has a name that's been around since before most of us were born. It's called wing-in-ground effect. Now if you've flown a tail dragger, or really any airplane, you already know ground effect. It's that cushion of air you feel in the last few feet before touchdown when the airplane suddenly wants to float and float and float and float down the runway. What's happening there is real, and it's measurable. When a wing gets close to a surface, roughly within one wingspan of it, the wingtip vortices that normally spill off the ends of your wing get squeezed. They can't fully form, and those vortices are the main source of induced drag. The drag your wing makes just by producing lift, choke off the vortices, and you choke off the drag. Here's what most people miss about ground effect. It doesn't just reduce a little drag. Down low, in strong ground effect, a wing can see its induced drag cut by 30, 40, even 50%. Your lift-to-drag ratio, the single number that describes how efficiently a wing flies, can jump dramatically. You are, for a few feet above the surface, flying a fundamentally more efficient airplane than the one you took off in. The data tells an interesting story here. That efficiency is why the Pelican doesn't flap. It's why the C-17 floats when it flares, and it's the entire reason a machine like the Viceroy can exist at all. So the obvious question is, if ground effect is this magical drag eraser, why isn't everything flying 6 feet off the water? Because ground effect is a devil to control. And to understand why, we need to talk about the Soviets. Picture the Caspian Sea in 1966. American spy satellites photograph something enormous moving across the water at 300 knots. It's the length of a football field. It has stubby little wings that look far too small to fly. And it's flying, or skimming, just a few meters above the surface. The Central Intelligence Agency didn't know what to call it. They named it the Caspian Sea Monster. That machine was a Soviet Ekranoplan, designed by an engineer named Rostislav Alexeyev. Ekranoplan roughly translates to screen glider, the screen being the surface effect it rode on. The Soviets built several. The most famous, the Loon class, carried anti-ship missiles and weighed close to 400 tons. It rode entirely on ground effect. It could not climb up and fly like a real airplane. It was married to the surface. And that's the first great lesson of ground effect. Those machines were violent to fly. Hit a big wave, and the aerodynamics change instantly. Fly too high, you lose the effect and the efficiency collapses. Fly too low, you're in the water. The pilot was constantly threading a needle between two failure modes, in a machine the size of an airliner, at a couple hundred knots, a few meters off the sea. The Soviet program eventually withered. The physics was real. The controllability was a nightmare, and that's the wall that ground effect vehicles have slammed into for 60 years. So here's the interesting part. Regent looked at that 60-year graveyard of Ekranoplans and said, the physics was never the problem. The problem was that 1960s analog controls couldn't manage it. And a lot has changed since 1966. Let's talk about what the Viceroy actually is. It's a 12-passenger, all-electric sea glider. It has a wingspan around 65 feet, roughly the size of a regional aircraft's wing. It's powered by a set of electric motors driving propellers along the leading edge of the wing, and its whole life happens over water. It operates from harbors and docks, not runways. In fact, it never touches land. But here's the clever part, the part that separates it from those Soviet monsters. The Viceroy operates in three distinct modes, and it transitions smoothly between them. Mode 1. It floats at the dock, and at low speed, it sits on its hull like an ordinary boat. Passengers board from a pier, it idles out of the harbor at maybe boat speed, displacing water, going nowhere fast. Perfectly stable, perfectly boring, which at a crowded dock is exactly what you want. Mode 2. It rises up on hydrofoils. As it accelerates, retractable foils extend down beneath the hull, and the whole vehicle lifts up out of the water and rides on those thin blades, the way a modern racing sailboat or a hydrofoil ferry does. Now the hull is clear of the waves. The drag drops, and it can build up speed through the chop that would beat a normal hull to death. This is the transition zone. This is how Regent gets through rough water without the passengers losing their lunch. Mode 3, it flies. Once it's fast enough, the foils retract, the wing takes over, and the Viceroy lifts off into ground effect. It cruises at a target speed of around 180 miles per hour, roughly a meter or two above the water, riding that same cushion the Caspian Sea monster rode, except now it's doing it with fly-by-wire flight controls. Modern sensors and computers making hundreds of tiny corrections a second that no human pilot could ever make by hand.
That's the whole bet right there. Take a 60-year-old aerodynamic idea that was uncontrollable with a stick and cables, and make it flyable with software. Fly-by-wire didn't just make ground effect a little easier. It's arguably the thing that makes it possible at all for a commercial operation. Now let's talk about why any of this matters to you. Sitting in a cockpit thinking about the future of the industry, the pitch is regional coastal transport. Think about a trip from Boston to Nantucket, or Los Angeles to Catalina, or island hopping in Hawaii, or the coast of the United Arab Emirates. Right now, those trips are either a slow ferry or an expensive small airplane out of a congested airport. Regent's argument is that a sea glider splits the difference. It's much faster than a ferry, roughly 6 times faster, and because it operates from the water and rides on ground effect, they claim it can do it at a fraction of the operating cost of an airplane, with no airport, no runway, and no local emissions, because it's fully electric. And here's where the electric part gets genuinely clever, because normally I'd be the first one at this microphone to poke holes in an electric aircraft's range. Batteries are heavy. Energy density is a fraction of jet fuel. We've covered that reality on this show more than once. But ground effect changes the math. Remember, this machine is flying at a lift-to-drag ratio far better than a normal airplane's, because it's living in that drag-reduced cushion the entire cruise. So every electron in the battery goes further. Regent targets a range of about 180 miles on today's battery technology, and they've talked about stretching that well beyond as batteries improve. For a normal 12-seat electric airplane, 180 miles would be a heroic number. For a sea glider, it's the efficiency of ground effect doing the heavy lifting. That's the promise. Now let me put my honest hat on, because this show doesn't do hype without caveats, and there are real problems here.
Problem 1. Weather and waves. Ground effect wants a relatively smooth surface. Regent has been public that the Viceroy is designed to handle waves up to a certain height, on the order of a few feet, and to climb higher above the surface to clear bigger swells when it has to. But the ocean is the ocean. A machine that flies 2 meters off the water lives or dies by sea state, and the honest question that isn't fully answered yet is, how many days a year a given route is actually flyable? A ferry runs in weather that would keep a sea glider at the dock. That reliability number is the one I'd be watching hardest. Problem 2. Regulation. And this is a fascinating one. What is this thing? Legally, is it a boat or an aircraft? Regent has been working with the United States Coast Guard because a wing in ground effect craft is actually classified under maritime rules, not under the Federal Aviation Administration. The FAA, the International Maritime Organization, has categories for exactly this kind of vehicle. That's a double-edged sword. On one hand, certifying under maritime rules may be faster and cheaper than full FAA aircraft certification, which we've seen strangle other electric aircraft timelines. On the other hand, it's a relatively untrodden path for a passenger vehicle this novel, and untrodden regulatory ground has a way of taking longer than anyone's slide deck predicts. Problem 3. Traffic and obstacles. When you're flying at 180 miles an hour a couple meters off the water, your world is full of things a normal pilot never worries about. Boats, buoys, swimmers, other sea gliders someday. Debris. The vehicle needs to detect and avoid all of it, in a plane of operation that's crowded with surface traffic. That's a sensing and autonomy challenge on top of the flight control challenge. And it's not trivial. So where do things actually stand? Because this show promised you an honest timeline.
Here's what's real. Regent built and flew a quarter-scale prototype, and then they built a full-scale human-carrying prototype of the Viceroy. And the meaningful milestone, the one that separates them from vaporware, is that they've conducted crewed on-water testing of that full-scale vehicle. In test campaigns on Narragansett Bay in Rhode Island, they've had people aboard running through the float and foil modes and building toward the full flight envelope. That's not a render. That's not an animation. That's a real machine with real people on it in the water doing the thing. What isn't done yet is the full commercial reality. Certification is in progress, not finished. They have a substantial order book, hundreds of vehicles on paper from operators, and even some defense interest. But order books are promises, not deliveries, and the leap from a test vehicle on Narragansett Bay to paying passengers on a scheduled route in real coastal weather is exactly the leap where a lot of promising aircraft programs have historically stumbled. Here's how I'd honestly frame it. The physics is not in question. Ground effect is real, and it's been proven at massive scale by the Soviets 60 years ago. The efficiency case is genuinely compelling. Maybe the most compelling I've seen for an all-electric passenger vehicle, precisely because it isn't fighting the battery problem head-on. It's routing around it with aerodynamics. The open questions are the boring, decisive ones. Weather reliability, regulatory path, operational safety in crowded water. Those aren't physics problems. They're engineering and execution problems. And engineering and execution problems are the ones that actually get solved if the company survives long enough to solve them. That's what makes Regent worth watching and worth being skeptical about at the same time. It's not asking you to believe in a miracle. It's asking you to believe that modern flight controls can finally domesticate a wild idea that was always aerodynamically sound and just too twitchy for human hands. And you know, there's something I genuinely love about that as an engineer. This isn't a brand new law of physics. It's an old, half-forgotten one sitting there in the last few feet above the runway that every one of us has felt on every landing, waiting for the technology to catch up to it. The Pelican figured it out a long time ago. We're just now building the flight computer to match the bird. My reporting today draws on Regent Craft's own published testing updates, historical accounts of the Soviet Ekranoplan program, and the maritime certification framework laid out by the Coast Guard and the International Maritime Organization. You can find more of what we cover over at radiohangar.com. Next time you grease a landing and feel that airplane float, remember that float is free energy the whole aviation world has been trying to bottle for 80 years. I'm Vector. Keep looking at how things work.